Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
G'day, it's Tim Watkin here. Before we start, I just wanted to say sorry we couldn't deliver on Thursday as usual. Politics has ground to a halt tour because our caucus is now horribly divided. We just had a couple of the team with other commitments and we just couldn't get things sorted for Thursday. So had to delay just a day. But here now is the final episode you've been waiting for. On with the show. All right, welcome to Caucus, the after. New Zealand has voted. We have chosen our 54th Parliament, and there have been a few changes. Now, whether that's kind of your normal change or real change that we were hearing about in the campaign, we're going to get into that during the campaign, during the show. Now, I'm sure that, sadly, our caucus has been slightly affected today. As it stands, we are a little bit depleted. So at the moment, you just get
Julian Wilcox here.
And Guyan Espiner.
Down the line, Guyan is joining us from Nelson. Lisa's not with us today, but don't worry, she hasn't been voted out or anything. She's probably your favourite, to be honest. but she has other commitments right now. Specials are being counted, though, and she may appear back in caucus before the end of the show. It depends whether she can make it here or not. But no promises. This is not a bottom line. But anyway, let's get on with the show, because since we last spoke, this happened.
Called Christopher Luxon to congratulate him on Nationals results. To my family, for everything that you have done for me.
We did this!
I just knew that we had to go for it.
I really look forward to serving the local people of Tāmaki.
It's actually a huge shift towards the Pāti Māori.
Thank you, New Zealand, because from all over your country, this great country, you have reached for hope and you have voted for change.
That was election night, if you remember it. It seems like a long time ago now.
Yeah.
Guyan, do you want to kick in first? What was your big takeaway from those, when you hear those moments, what does it take your mind back to?
Well, there are several real historical milestones here, aren't there? Christopher Luxon setting a record for being MP to Prime Minister after just one term. And you've got to give it to him. He campaigned on the ground really strongly. They made some strategic errors, in my view, that we've talked about with New Zealand First over those weeks. But you really have to give it to him. Being Prime Minister after just one term is an extraordinary result. For Labour, I hope this caucus meeting is happier than Labour's first caucus meeting. Really, to have a majority and have your support and be the first two-term government since the Longhi Douglas years is a real historic drubbing for Labour. Yeah. So they're probably the two big standout milestones for me.
Look at this. Hey. Sooner than the specials are in. The specials are in and we do have an extra caucus member.
Oh, surprise appearance.
Lisa Rowan does.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, Lisa.
Take a breath. We're just up to Julian anyway, so you can compose yourself.
Yeah, no, you don't have to listen to this. So look, I agree Julian with everything Guyan said. You know, it's interesting because I was in Christchurch at the last election and during actually the long 2020-2021. So the impact of the Auckland vote and what happened in Auckland and that coming to pass in the election results is probably something that I underestimated because I wasn't here and didn't feel that as much. The other standout for me, obviously, is some seats that we picked, i.e. Tāmaki and Wellington Central, went the way in which we actually talked
about.
Yes,
you got Wellington Central, my friend.
I got one. Don't open the envelope yet, because then it's all going to go downhill. I got one right. But the performance of the Māori Party, you know, who would think that even now we're still waiting for results, Tai Tokerau, Tāmaki Makaurau, they came out and had such a wonderful campaign and amazing result.
You were talking them up at first, and then we weren't so sure closer to the election, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was on.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously the plan with Mika Whaitiriri in Ikaruwa Rāwhiti, you know, we thought that some of those seats were going to go. As it turned out, that's the only one that went the other way, which shows you the decision that they made in bringing Mecca across from Labour they were punished for, and yet in every other seat they made them contestable or indeed won them.
Right. Yeah, I want to come back to Auckland because that's, I think, a really big point of the night. But two rules of politics that leapt out for me. One is the cliche one, which is governments get voted out, governments don't get voted in, right? I think, you know, clearly this was in the existing government more than any other kind of statement. It's interesting how the vote spread, but you're talking about a lot of voters who just wanted something that wasn't what we had now, right?
Yeah. Absolute shellacking.
You've probably
said that. But
No one had used the word shellacking
okay.
yet.
Okay, so I mean,
you're the first shellacker.
Right, you're obviously covering off your kind of surprises. I'm just coming in on this, so forgive me if I've repeated anything that you've already covered.
Some of the
surprises and things that we had kind of flagged and things that came to fruition, Helen White in Mount Albert, I've got to say, you know, if we're talking about an example of the pulse of Auckland, that's got to be it, right? The former electorate of MPs and party leaders,
yep.
20,000 plus majority, there's 105, I think, votes in it when I last checked, so they'll be looking out for specials there. And then the chutzpah of Helen White saying she'd done a good job when she was sort of asked about it by media, I think is just read the room, read the room, right? And then obviously saw Michael Wood go down in a less than blaze of glory. And I looked at that and thought, that's Phil Goff's seat.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
Phil Goff's seat. These are seats that have been Labour through and through, Newlyn.
To use a phrase, bread and butter Labour seats, right?
Yeah. Te Aratu, some of these are still on the undecided, depending on special votes. And then you guys were obviously mentioning the Māori seats there. To see Calvin Davis, who's obviously, you know, hanging on to the ledge to make sure that he's in Te Tai Tukaro and Tamaki Makaurau. Really interesting. And then in terms of the wins for various parties, obviously Brooke Van Velden in taking Tamaki from Simon O'Connor.
Rob Muldoon's seat, if you're talking about past leaders.
Yeah.
You know, that
past
was as blue as it was, used to be as blue as it blue.
And against a massive, you know, Bloon Army, as some people have calling it.
Yeah.
You know, for her to swim against that tide.
Yeah.
I mean, Simon O'Connor, is the Tamaki coffee of this year's election, isn't he?
Very, releasable. Just to, someone that
That's
people
were... That's a very diplomatic way of putting it, isn't it, Glyon?
let's talk about Auckland then, because you raised those Auckland seats, so let's just go there. It's interesting that even the Labour Party, Andrew Little spoke earlier this week, and it seemed that they kind of had a sense of what was coming.
I had good friends in Auckland who were telling me that we had lost Auckland, and that was a consequence of the COVID response and just the extraordinary level of disruption that Auckland suffered. And Auckland, you know, Auckland had it the worst, and then that was compounded, I think, you know, this year as the economic conditions got really tough for a lot of households, a lot of families. So, look, that's a reality.
Yeah. It was very much a reality. Can I just take you through, because it was interesting, you talked about, I did a few numbers this morning on the seats at Albert. It's interesting how much, I didn't realise how much the party votes can swing there sometimes, especially in 2014, Labour and National votes were literally almost identical. So there's certainly movement at a party vote level. It had gone big, both seats had gone big to Labour last time. But it was interesting to see that National wasn't in the party vote in both of those seats, pretty much the same. But Labour was down about 12,000. So my point about government's been voted outright, in both those seats you just saw, it wasn't a huge embrace of Labour, please go away Labour, right? There was really strong swing against the incumbency there. And if you look into South Auckland, the lack of turnout in South Auckland, right? I mean, I think that's crucial for us to pick up on, because you saw Māngere, just the voter turnout. Māngere 2017, 28,000 people voted in Māngere. 2020, up to 32,000. This year, down to 19,000 just voting at all. Manurewa in 2017, 24,000, up to 30,000, back down to 20,000 this vote. So people just stayed home.
Yeah, Guy, you want to weigh in on that one?
Well, I think that's the result of a middling and muddled campaign from Labor, where they tried to hug the centre ground. They didn't have the energy and the clear vision to bring their voters out. They spent most of the year trying to hose down the previous agenda, not enough of the year trying to actually define and carve out a place on the political spectrum for themselves. And so that's what you get when you don't really have much of a vision except to say, oh, we might be a sort of a bit of a version of National Light. They went for the GST off food, but then didn't really prosecute it, didn't really want to talk about it. So what did they have to offer to get those people out to vote? You know, a dentist appointment in 2030 or whatever it was, everything seemed to be a bit half-assed, if I could use that rather impolite political scientist phrase. And so they just didn't give people a reason to turn out, and they didn't.
Right.
It's also going to be interesting. We were speaking to David Latelli on election night about some of the problems at the polling booths.
Yeah.
So in the wash-up from the Electoral Commission, because they do a post-election, you know, analysis report, it's going to be interesting to see whether that had any impact as well, which was people saying that they turned up and they didn't have forms to enrol them on the Māori roll, and that some people were left waiting for hours, so, you know, gave up after a period of time. And it's caused a lot of anger in some communities. Yeah.
They didn't cover themselves in glory, the Electoral Commission, really, did they? Those early vote cards didn't arrive.
Early vote cards.
I went to vote in Mount Albert myself on the morning and strolled across the road to vote at the local primary school, and the entire website was down. They couldn't. I had a special vote card, but people who didn't were waiting quite some time to have have it manually searched. So
the app was down.
You had one job, and I don't know that you did it.
Yeah, so the app was down, and they've admitted that the app was down.
To be fair, I've seen people speaking to from who have been returning officers in the past going, look, even in the 70s we used to run out of ballots and so forth. So this isn't totally unique, perhaps.
So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out. In terms of what Guyon was saying, I was very interested to hear Sue Bradford, MP, speaking this week, saying that, you know, combined, the Māori Party, Greens, well, they are potentially going to pass Labour, be the opposition, was her theory. And in saying...
tends to say that a little bit.
Yes.
And it's, you know,
look at the numbers. I mean, Labour hasn't covered itself in glory. And the point she makes in saying that, which I think is the most important thing, rather than that premise, is what Guyon was saying about Labour light. You know, it's not enough to... campaign on not offending anyone.
Although I'm always careful. I mean, to quote Taylor Swift, because that's what we do in this campaign, is we just need to calm down a little bit. I mean, this is incumbency, right? Part of the poison for Labour time was just being the incumbent. That, you know, whether it's 3 years or 6 years or 9 years, at some point, Labour and B will be the change next
pass
time.
Off.
So the mood for change will switch to another horse,
no,
right?
No, that pass off, Tim, pass off. So part of that is being in the incumbent, change for change's sake.
Yeah.
Part of that is perhaps floating some of the policies that make you identifiable as Labour, watering down you are giving the people who you are seen to be the advocate for, the working and unemployed and the grafters, watering it so far down that those people don't recognise you anymore, having a bunch of ministers that fall off the wagon in epic style
in the lead-up to the election. You cannot underestimate that.
Changing leaders in an election year with a leader who nominated the election date before going Haere Rā and handing over the baton, which was arguably dipped in you-know-what, to Chris Hipkins and leaving him to deal
not
with
stardust.
It.
It was not dipped
no,
in stardust.
No, not dipped in stardust. And perhaps not reading the room partway through the pandemic, and when I say partway through, near the end of the pandemic, identifying that arguably you had done what was required, but you just got stuck in your lane there and you didn't move as the situation changed. That is what some people will argue.
I know Guy must come in, but Julian, you haven't. I mean, it was a change election, right? Mm. And Labour, with a new leader, had a chance to potentially push for change, but they didn't. I do wonder whether Chris Hipkins, whether history might treat him a bit more kindly, that if we are, if the economy is in bad shape, did he really, was he responsible not to go mad?
Yeah, can you blame it all on him? Probably no, but he is the one who ignored the wealth tax.
Yeah,
he
that's
made
true.
The captain's call.
But I was interested in what Guyon said earlier about the previous agenda they had to deal with. How much, and this hasn't really been talked about, how much does Jacinda Ardern get blamed for this?
Look, a lot, I think, as saying, making the call they made in February, making the call that she made, she called the election date and then she jumped off ship.
It was pretty brutal. It set him up.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that came out in his speech on Saturday night. And he didn't really get a fair suck of the salve. The other thing I think Labor has to think about very clearly now is they didn't need to have discussions with the Green Party, nor did they need to have discussions with the Māori Party. If they are to be a coalition on the left, with Labor potentially leading, or at the next election potentially one of three, they've got to have a much more open-door policy when they talk with these parties. Mm. Labor locked themselves away from them, and they got stung by it, and they need to figure out what they're going to do with those other parties and if they can work in unison going forward. The problem that they'll probably think is we lost the centre. So we need to figure out how we can get the centre back.
Yep.
There'll be those on the left who will say, no, that's not what you should be doing. You should be a true Labour Party with true Labour Party policies, which, let's face it, the Greens and the Māori Party upheld in the election campaign, not Labour.
Yeah. Guyon?
I think that somehow, remarkably, they managed to achieve the worst of both worlds. I mean, if you were going to halve your vote, why didn't you go out in a blaze of glory and do some stuff that's some Labour stuff? Why didn't you do a wealth tax or a capital gains tax? Why, at some point, didn't the chiefs in the room and in the red team sit around and say, well, look, we're not going to be in power forever. Can we get some stuff on the record, on the books, that is actually going to make a difference for our people? So they did the worst of both worlds. They tried to hug the centre line and tried not to do anything to upset the horses and still halved their vote with achieving very, very little. I mean, I can't remember a time that such a political opportunity was squandered. And if you remove the COVID response, which I know you can't, and I thought that their initial response was excellent, but if you look at what's on the record in terms of achievements, it's very, very little. Think of what Clark and Cullen government might have done with an absolute majority. So I think that they achieved the worst of both worlds by being too timid.
So there's the timidity. Go back to the C's. And there was crime, there was COVID, there was co-governance, and there was the cost of living. So four C's in a way, really, which probably, certainly in Auckland, right, that cost. But you're saying that the timidity you're talking about, Guyon, goes back both terms, right? And just to bring back, as well as the Hipkins era.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how long? For those of us, they actually had that Michael Cullen-led tax working group, which gave them a blueprint for what they wanted to do. Now, then Jacinda Ardern ruled it out under her leadership. But as some of you guys were talking about before, Chris Hipkins had the chance when the baton was passed to him, to actually break out of that mould. And that's, in some ways, I think history will view as the pivotal moment. David Parker and Grant Robertson lining up behind a wealth tax, in fact, doing a lot of work, cabinet papers are very advanced. And Chris Hipkins from abroad, I can't remember what far-flung climb he was in at the time, killing the thing dead and really leaving them with nothing to run on.
And that makes it interesting for future leadership as well, because he said not on my watch, right? So that means if you're going to move further to the left and arguably be more late with Chris Hipkins, because he said no way, right?
I'm kicking back a little bit to you guys, and you know, it's been a long time since Labor was the party of, you know, Fraser and Walter Nash. I mean, I point out again that, you know, the Fraser, saying Fraser brings to mind, for Hipkins, he was again pushing against the tide of history, right? And, you know, replacement prime ministers do not win elections. Peter Fraser is the only one to have ever done that, either any party anywhere in New Zealand history. So almost impossible for where you start, whatever he'd done. But, you know, Labour and National have both, for a generation now, been hugged the centre. Isn't that what the major parties do? Are we really being, we're not really going to see from either party a big swing left or right in opposition.
I think the one
we didn't
thing,
see it from National.
The one thing you're not factoring in here, which is what Guyon referenced, is the romping great majority and mandate Labour had. Yeah. So that was the car pie from the voting public to go, you know, full speed.
Or it was a thank you very much for saving our lives. I don't know if whether they. I mean, yeah. Look, you're right. The political numbers were there. They could have done. They could
have
done
the position.
Something.
It doesn't really matter how you interpret the mandate. You just had an unrivaled and unprecedented ability to make change. Yeah. And in a unicameral situation like New Zealand Parliament, where there's no upper house, you could have done what you like. Now, I'm not suggesting they should have gone crazy, but they must be sitting back there going, wow, we really wasted and squandered a massive opportunity there.
No, that's probably true. But so we're left now with a Labour Party that is, you know, looking at wounds and figuring out where to go next, but with still Chris Hipkins as the leader.
For now.
For now.
The leader is the leader until they're not, and I'm certainly still the leader of the Labour Party, and indicated on Saturday, I'm still absolutely committed to making sure that we manage a smooth transition to a new government and a smooth transition into opposition. And, you know, I've still got a bit of fight left in me.
Do you think you can make a good opposition leader?
Look, I'm supported. I'm absolutely committed to supporting Labour into opposition, and we have a job that we will need to do in opposition.
Bit of Amar there.
Yeah, but I actually think he'd be a really good opposition leader. He's got a bit of mongrel in him. And But of course, they're not huge on options, is
no,
the other problem.
No, they're not.
So they're going to need a bit of time. They'll want some others to come in and replace people like Andrew Little and others who, you know, after specials might not make it or might think, actually, you know, I've got to give someone else a go. But I think he'd be a good opposition leader. And they want him to buy time, right? They want him to give him a couple of months just to take a breath and see what happens. So I think he could be effective there. And it'll give time for others to canvass opinion and say whether or not they should go for it or not. And I think that would be a good thing. The problem they've got, I think, is, you know, this is someone, as Lisa said, who turned things down and said under his leadership they're not going to happen. So eventually I don't think he's going to be there at the next election. I think the other thing Labour's got to think about seriously is it time where they start to say, actually, let's work closer with parties like the Māori Party and give away the Māori electorates? Now, that's a big call, and they might not do it. But if they want to get back in...
Willie Jackson of that.
No, that's true. But I mean, they only got one of them back. But the generational change that we've seen in those Māori seats, I mean, look at Hana Lafferty, Māori Clark, Kusha Tongaide is young as well. You know, people have said we want young aspirational leaders in those seats. And let's face it, that's not Labour.
Yeah. They need to find some young aspirational leaders.
He's got 3 months, right? He's got 3 months before there is a vote on this, if it goes
the
full distance.
The Constitution kicks in, yep.
Yep. So that takes him through, just doing some quick finger numbers thingies, that takes him through the summer break, right?
Just, okay.
And so the other thing you've got to remember, others that who have fallen on their swords in terms of leaders, Helen Clark being the exception, obviously, you know, didn't resign, carried on, went and became Prime Minister. But if you look at Bill English, Phil Goff, even though they may have waited a little while, Bill English several months, they still went. There's this issue of stability, right?
Yep.
You don't sort of blow everything up because you've been decimated at the election. You need a bit of a rebuild. And in terms of their lineup, I mean, I'd say Andrew Little is the first domino to fall, and that there will be others on the list that will bog off once there is more sort of surety over who's leading into the future and people are bedded in. And they won't want to leave it too late to get their new young bloods in on the list if they're going. And I think, I mean, for some, can you see Grant Robertson staying? Mm. I mean, academia's got to be calling
Hard
for him,
see.
Doesn't it?
Go on.
Oh, I'd agree with that. Grant Robertson looked like he'd actually checked out many months ago in my eyes. And we are a lot less patient now. I mean, Rowling lost in 75, 78 and 81. And they kept him on as leader. Nowadays, we just don't have the patience for leaders who lose. And if you fast forward to 26, the idea that Hipkins would be leading Labour into that election seems very, very unlikely to me. So it really is a matter of when rather than if.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting, the Labour, you're right, for a lot of Labour people, they have been thinking about the impact on their future, including one Labour MP that not many people had heard of before this week, called Dan Rosewarne.
Mm. This thing for me was, you know, going to the Cora Club and then the red lights of doom go off because your Cora Club's been cancelled. And to me, it's all about kind of, you know, moving from champagne to lemonade.
That's what it's all about?
What an extraordinary case of entitleitis that is. I think it was hugely damaging, actually. After I thought it was quite amusing, after I worked out who he was, I thought that was a hugely arrogant.
List MP, right? Down from Waimakariri Way?
Yep. So, former army.
Yeah. So here's the thing, folks. After saying that.
But outgoing is the point, I think, for the Labour Party. He's gone now.
Now. But if, as discussed in the previous few seconds, more people bog off and retire. Da doing.
I'm not sure he could be back.
He's still queuing at the Koru Lounge.
He's on the cusp for getting back into the Koru Lounge. Anyway,
let's move on to some other parties because I think, look, as we said, it's governments that lose these kind of elections. So I think Labour was worth that good discussion. But let's look at others. National obviously rode a wave of change. They made a good case for what the kind of change they wanted to see and obviously connected with people. What are you...
When the first results came in, I think at about 7:30-ish or just after, something like that, and you saw National at 41%. It was interesting because after our last caucus, and I had Stuart Nash and Paula Bennett we were at TV3, and I said, man, if it goes big, it could really go big. You could be losing seats like, Banks Peninsula and, Wigram could be in play. As you had talked about. And they all laughed me out of the room. They said, that's the stupidest thing we've ever heard, and Stuart had his calculations, and all of a sudden at 7:30, it might have been 7:40. National was at 41, and you knew it was on. And then everything just went blue, and I don't like the blue army phrase, but anyway, I've just used it, so there you go. But as those results come in, and yeah, it came down a little bit, but as that came in, everything just started getting thrown up with the colour blue. And you're right. I don't think National, at the end of it, had a good campaign. That last 2 weeks, I thought, was messy. The holes came out and everything else. But we talked about
that had been
baked in.
And it well
and truly baked in. And the other thing I noticed, I voted in Mount Albert as well, and it was huge. It was a big turnout in the booth that I was in. And I wonder if this is people getting out and wanting that change, because they'd be motivated by wanting that change of government. And it turned out that way in Mount Albert.
Mount Albert voted 7,700 votes for National last election, 9,300 this election. Hardly
general
a huge...
General role.
So hardly huge.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I find really interesting is obviously they won a ton of electorates, right? And we expect the two main parties to have a greater share of the vote. Don't know if you've talked about that. Even though the National Party scooped a bunch of electorates back, ones that had been won off them previously and had arguably been traditionally blue electorates, they also won these Labour, so-called Labour, bastions and electorates. But, we've all talked about the fact that the party vote is key, and neither party were really in the zone that you might have expected.
The two major party vote was the third lowest out of the 10 MMP elections we've had. So not the worst. There's two that's been had a smaller share for the major.
Well, that's a big prize, not the worst.
but the two major parties did third lowest out of the 10 we've had.
Yeah, that's interesting. And National at what? Just under 39 is where they sit now, isn't it, percentage-wise?
Yeah.
That's about really as low as you can go and still lead the government. To be fair, Labour got 37 in 2017. So, to National's 44. So, and obviously really did rely on Winston Peters. So they... Look, it is a win for, obviously, for National, and Christopher Luxon is the incoming Prime Minister, but it isn't a real resounding win, is it? I mean, at 38, 39%, that's about as low as you can go and still lead the government. So they would have been far happier in those early hours of the count when they were up to 42, weren't they? They were sitting around 41, 42, and then you watched it drop away. And they may well lose a seat or two. They lost two seats on the specials in 2017.
Yep.
Look, who knows with the MIQ veterans how they'll react. And so we don't know about whether the specials will go the way they normally do.
But they're a small percentage, aren't they, Guy?
Yes.
The overseas vote is only
15%,
about 80,000 of the 500 and something thousand. That's going to be, I agree with you, it's going to be super interesting. And they will be on a relative knife edge, National, because it obviously opens the door to one Winston Peters. Mm. Yes.
I think the door's wide open to that. I think that they, and they know that, because as we've talked about before, a one-seat majority, they've got 61 out of 121 Parliament at the moment. Technically, you could go to the Governor-General and say, here's my government. But we know that MPs, some MPs are stupid, and some MPs do stupid things.
No.
And so you get people who drive cars drunk, who forget to sell shares or whatever it is, and they get sacked, and you have to have a by-election. And if you lose that, then there's a humiliation of having to go to the Governor-General, or worse, at that point, having to go to Winston Peters and seeing the political inflation of your deal go up fourfold because he could ask for anything he likes. So if they're being sensible, which I think they are, they have to accept now that we need Winston, and they have to deal with him as such.
So what will the nature of those negotiations be now? Because if you're Winston, you just sit there and go, well, what's the point in us talking? We're going to wait for special votes and see how much you need us by, and then my leverage goes up.
He always talks about waiting for the special votes, does Winston, and for that exact reason. Your value and the special votes tell you your value, don't they, in very terms. You don't want to go too early and undersell yourself.
Yeah.
And I suppose in terms of that, how do the talks go? Well, apparently they go like mergers and
acquisitions. Yes, well, that was really interesting, wasn't it?
It was. Let's have a listen to what Christopher Luxon said the day after the election.
What we've made sure is that we have good alignment and good chemistry. And I think, when I've done a lot of mergers and acquisitions and I've done a lot of negotiations, getting the chemistry and getting the relationship right is the platform and the foundation for actually then being able to work your way through the transactional issues. And so, that's what our conversations have been about.
And he also just threw a little bit of shade on past governments at the same time.
I've watched New Zealand elections play out over many years. I've been pretty unimpressed in terms of how that gets done.
So, go on.
Very interesting. Some interesting words. He used the word chemistry, which repulsed me a little bit, thinking about what sort of chemistry experiment it might be with Seymour's, Sir Peters and Luxon. But anyway, and he used the word transactional, which I found interesting too. And there was the M&A sort of merger and acquisition analogy. So very, very much on board with his business speak there. But I don't think that Peters would have been terribly impressed by him being, pejorative about previous negotiations, because most of those have involved Winston Peters. So that may have not have been a terribly good start. And I still remember when Bill English was negotiating with Peters in 2017, and he came on Morning Report because I was interviewing him, and he said, he described him as a maverick. And, Peters, words matter, and getting off on that kind of foot, I don't know whether that was terribly smart. But it's a frustrating time for Luxon, isn't it? Because he's the incoming Prime Minister. He wants to get moving. You can see all that Energizer Bunny vibe coming off him. But he has to wait for the old fox and the specials to come in.
And he still wants to. He clearly, he's talking about still saying that the preference for him is National and Act, National Act. He's still very much treating New Zealand First as the possibility that might have to come later. Presumably that's a leverage angle, right? Because he must know certainly going to be part of his government.
Yep, no, absolutely, which is probably why he got out of the negotiations on Thursday and went back to his roots and went back to his school and went back to the electorate and got out of Wellington and said, oh, negotiations are going, I'm going back home.
Yeah.
And talking to the electorate, right? So that was an interesting kind of thing. The CEO approach of Luxon is really interesting. It reminds me a lot of Scott Morris, the way that, Scotty from marketing, the way in which he would kind of run a government, which is interesting because this is going to be a different style of prime ministership. He's not giving himself a portfolio. He's saying, I'm going to be over all the detail. I'm going to look at this. And he's very CEO in his approach, which is interesting given the last year and the financial performance of Air New Zealand and some decisions that he made in his last year as CEO in Air New Zealand. I think that's going to be different for a lot of people to get used to.
Look, I do. I think, and we've discussed about this between us off air at various times, but I don't think the business world and the political world are as similar as people make it out, right? That you don't have the kind of a chief executive has real power and quite who they often pick themselves, and you know, is very well briefed and very focused on what they want to be focused on. Back to events, dear boy, events. You've got a mishmash of cabinet ministers with all kinds of different ambitions, let alone other parties who are there to actually break you down. It's just such a different environment, isn't it, Lisa?
I think it is. And also, you wonder, how often do prime ministers' calls? We've seen a few of them. Chris Hipkins made one and others have too. But politics is supposed to be a democracy, so including the people around you, whereas I see a CEO position as more of the cabinet. And in New Zealand, we do not elect prime ministers.
No.
We don't. We elect parties and then they choose this. So I think it's going to be interesting. So does that make him the chief people's officer? I don't know. But in every part of his language,
from HR is here to see you. Yeah. It's really corporate.
And it's pervasive in his language. And it'll be interesting to see if that changes. I mean, everyone, hey team, everybody's on the team. Whether it's his family team, his parliamentary team, or just a team. So, you know, there is a lot of that kind of language, and it's going to be interesting to see how it translates into his style. On what Guyon was talking about, you don't want to offend anyone that you're wanting to do a deal with at the moment, so it makes sense to stay stumm for a bit until you, you know, see how the deck is stacked.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit more open to the idea that there are a lot of transferable skills from business and into politics. Not totally, and I hear what you guys are saying. But, there are quite a few skills in leadership which would be transferable, and I think you saw that to a degree with John Key, who, no matter what you think of him, was a pretty successful prime minister. Also, on the corporate speak, it rubs me up the wrong way because I live my life in words, and I that it jars with me to some degree. But I think it could well work for him if that's combined with getting results. If New Zealand
can't be one or the other, though.
Yes, that's right. It's gonna really great if the corporate speak is combined with a failing results. But if he gets results and he sets targets and he moves quickly, people might snigger a little bit at the jargon and the business stuff. But if they see this guy who's coming in and getting things done, as he likes to say, if they see those results, then I think it could work.
Look, I agree with that because you know the perception that they did really well in opposition National was to paint Labour as in government as a party of failing to deliver, which is not an unreasonable picture that they painted. And so he can turn that around. Can we just play the clip? Because this is we're going to open the envelopes in just a second because we're going to have to go any moment. But can we just play this clearly laid out where I thought Luxon is taking us in this next term when he was talking on ZB this week?
Yeah, the way I'm doing it is I'm going to be very clear on those better publics and ministers and those agencies accountable for delivering for them. And, you know, there'll be ministers that will certainly need support. Already in the last 2 or 3 months, I've brought in Bill English, Stephen Joyce, Wayne Eagleson to have sessions with our caucus about what the reality of going to government looks like, how you actually work with the public service to get a result. It's about securing quick and early wins in that first 6 months in each of the portfolios. I think realistically you get to go with the 2 or 3 big structural strategic things for the rest of the term and get those away and implemented well, and then you set up again.
Those are KPIs. Public service targets are KPIs.
But I think that might be some of the most transparent stuff he's ever said in terms of you get a few runs now, you train them up really big now, you get the experts in, you get them to get a few 6 months, and then it's about setting up for the next election. It's quite a clear agenda, right?
Yeah. Until you add Seymour and Peters to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. Yeah. That's my point. And events.
I was talking to the CEO, public service CEOs yesterday very quickly. They were given initially targets of 2, 4, 6, and 10%. It's now been crunched down to 4, 6, and 8, probably 8% is going to be the target. For some of those smaller government departments, that's going to really hammer them at 8%.
That's going to be a really interesting thing to watch. There are plenty of policy issues to come, and we haven't talked about policies, but boy, you know, certainly the public sector stuff, climate emergency response funds, you know, the housing tax deductibility bright line test, Three Waters gone, there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen, whoever's in that coalition.
But anyway, the Oscars envelope.
It is.
I've got Guyon's here.
Mine's a special vote.
I suspect, see, the signature unbroken on the seal.
The seal, we can all confirm the seals are unbroken.
The seals are unbroken. I suspect, got the line, not here to soak up all the glory. To be.
I have this, I know. Isn't that annoying?
Mine was rubbish.
So
he's going to be right.
Come on, give us yours, Julian.
Because I think we know how wrong the rest of us are.
No, I'd rather not, because I overcooked the greens and I was told not to by the same thing, apparently.
just to confirm, yours are percentages, aren't they?
You're going with
percentages. Okay, yeah. So okay,
all right, Julian, you go first.
Look, mine was percentages. I went National, this is atrocious. National 35, Labour 29, Greens 14, ACT 9, New Zealand First 7, Māori Party 3.5.
Not too bad.
Rubbish.
Okay. Well, it's not too far away from me, so I'm... Lisa, do you want to?
Okay, mine is National 34%, Labour 27%, Greens 12%, New Zealand First 9.6%, ACT 6%, and Te Pāti Māori 2%.
So you were expecting a swing to New Zealand First that
Correct.
We didn't see?
And a game's not over yet. You know.
All right. Well, I was out with the miners. I had National on 34.9 and Labour on 29.1. I thought that swing back to Labour would be a little bit more real than it was. Greens 12.5, a little bit off, but not quite as bad as you. ACT 9.5, and New Zealand First 6, and Te Pāti Māori 2.7.
Guy on ever the efficient.
So I was almost bang on with Te Pāti Māori, just
you
like
were.
To say.
You okay. were.
Oh, well, all of us were bang on with what? That's about the totality.
Claim you what I got, man.
Guy on, I know you've got this on your phone, so do you want to read your results? And I can confirm that you... Oh, you haven't got it?
What you tell me. I can't remember.
All right.
Remember.
You can't remember? Okay. National 37%. This is Guy on.
Okay.
National 37%. Labour 26.
Ooh.
He was in the nosebleed section with the Greens on 14%.
Oh, yeah, that was too high.
ACT 9.
Yeah.
And he
Bang
said
on.
Māori Party 3%.
Oh, New Zealand First 6, I think I had, didn't I?
No, you didn't include them, so you got
oh,
them.
You
did
that's
not.
DQ.
You
that's
did
DQ,
not.
Can, surely. I'm like,
you did not write them down, bud.
Okay, wow. I'm going to pull out my phone and my photo.
No, no. This is
that's automatic disqualification. I feel much better now.
It's true. I had them on 7. I had them on seven.
This is like NCAA, dude. Unless you write it down, it didn't happen. So he's missed an entire party.
Right, that's just embarrassing.
I automatically feel better about myself.
I remember a guy who couldn't fill his superannuation form out properly. and I feel a little bit like that.
And I love the fact that you even signed it at the bottom to show that it was legitimately yours and completed.
Well, you're
actually,
right.
I'll go and get a document from the boot of my car
to prove it.
If you just hang with me.
Look, you got the majors,
the
just pretty close. Yeah. And I do think probably what's National now on 38.9. I suspect they might come down towards 38 or even towards your 37 by the end of the special. So you might even be closer. By the time the specials are counted, we'll have to wait and see though. Who wins then?
Not me, but
about
40% for the Greens.
Nobody wins on right. that, which just shows you polling and guesstimates. But you know, we may come closer after the specials.
I think after the specials, we'll look slightly better than we do right now.
Liz Gunn's waiting for the specials. She's waiting.
Let's go for a recount. I'm going to leave.
All
you
right.
carry on.
Killed
we will. Look, we can probably just about wrap it up now. The other thing I was going to say about Auckland was I'll be really interested to see. We talked about Simon O'Connor going from Tamaki and the religious vote around that. The religious vote is still quite strong in Auckland, I thought, especially with the immigrant populations. You saw, the in National, they have a really strong Auckland caucus of quite conservative Christian people. That was added to in Mount Albert this year.
Yeah.
I'm not casting any shade on that at all. I'm just saying it's going to be interesting to observe what that means for some of that vote in Auckland, because I thought that did happen.
It was interesting on News Hub's Red Research poll they released recently, which had it was a poll on a treaty referendum and whether or not people would support that or not. 56%-ish said that they wouldn't support it, which was really interesting. ACT still wants to get this thing going.
Yeah,
and it sounds like that the Prime Minister, the new Prime Minister, is trying to keep it, not necessarily take it off the table anymore, which is interesting because that's not what he was saying during the campaign. But the fact that poll's come out might actually pour cold water on this thing, because if it does happen, boy, oh boy, that's going to be an interesting 3 years.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a particularly firebrand kind of issue, and I, When you put it into a referendum and people have to vote yes and no, you're asking for trouble. I agree.
Exactly what happened in Australia that night.
I hope that we have a more nuanced debate and discussion than that. Guy, do you want to have a final thought?
Like we have here. No, I would agree with Julian and yourself on that. I think it could be very destructive for New Zealand and very destructive for Chris Luxon. I mean, it could derail a whole bunch of other stuff and really take over if they allow ACT to push ahead with this. And then you'd have Peters trying to outmuscle ACT on it as well. And I think, you know, Kiwi who responded to that poll is just saying, well, look, you know, this isn't an issue that we want to die on a hill for. We don't want to tear ourselves apart. For what? What's the best case scenario? Like, what's the win here? I mean, what's the win that ACT sees? Are we going
to ACT sees protection of democracy? Right? They say it as an existential democratic.
How would you frame the question?
Exactly.
God help us.
So what are we going to say?
We couldn't even get a good question over a flag, right?
How would you actually make a question? Like, should we? What's the yes or no question? This is a massive, nuanced, complex discussion that is always evolving. How can you boil it down to a yes no question? I don't know what a win looks like. So hopefully it was a campaign tactic and will be relinquished. And ACT can say, "Oh,
sounds
well,
like he's not giving
no.
up."
No, every interview I've seen with David Seymour in this past week, he keeps mentioning it. So you know, I think in all sincerity, he believes it as a we must save democracy
that's
thing.
That's a position that he can take. I can't see it being constructive for the National Led government.
No, be careful what you wish for, eh? The other thing that I'm interested in is going to be the superannuation debate, because someone has to lose.
Yep.
Someone has to lose there within the government and even within opposition, because you've got every party just about has a different position. So who actually has the power to say this is where we're going with super is going to be really interesting. And look, my final word of the day is just to say, I wanted to pick up, because Guy, you said about, you know, the nature of bringing New Zealand First into the fold now because of, you know, politicians are stupid. 13 by-elections this century in New Zealand. I did a count back. That's an average of about 1.5. And if anything, they're speeding up. It's been an average of 2 per term in the past 3 terms.
Yeah.
So if you go by normal, if you can have 2 by-elections in the next 3 years, count the Kitty Allens and so forth.
And I don't know how many
you've
got on there, but the governments usually lose them, don't they?
Yeah. So,
so you don't want to be in that position.
So hello. So is that the phone calling? Phone. I think it's Winston on the phone. All right, guys, let's wrap it up. Thank you very much for your expertise. It's been a heck of a lot of fun to talk to you guys about this for the last 3 months, and to pick it all apart. It's been, look, it's probably not been the most inspiring campaign we've ever had, but it's been fascinating. And there's been lots of history that's come out of it, as you pointed out, Guy.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, it's been great fun to unpack it with you all. It was actually really, really great to have Julian on board this time. So hopefully he can join us again, because it's been really good. And thanks to everyone who listens, because I get a lot of feedback off it. So it's really cool that people are engaging with politics, which is the idea. Because we see we're not professional forecasters, are we? I think we've established that.
No.
Our idea is to try and you know, engage in some debate that inspires people to get involved in politics, and that's why we're there.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it's been awesome to be a part of it, so thank you for having me. And I just have to say that Paddy Gower always comes up to me after every caucus episode that he listens to and provides his own commentary and feedback, so I'm not sure we've done a good job. Paddy Gower's trying to be a part of the conversation, but we contributed nonetheless, I think.
That's excellent. All right, well, thank you. As Guy said, thank you to all of you for listening or watching on YouTube. It's been great to have your company these months, and let's see what the next three holds. God defend New Zealand. Thanks very much, everybody.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.